Okay. Hi, everybody. My name's Roger Dingledine. I'm going to be telling you a little bit about anonymous remailers and some research we've done lately. How many people here know about the concept of anonymous remailers? Excellent. How many people here know the concept of Mixmaster? Okay, I'm going to try to take the rest of you up through what Mixmaster does pretty quickly and then start talking about some problems with it and how to fix them. Okay, so first of all, the threat model. A lot of people try to build anonymous systems without really knowing what they're trying to defend against. In our case, we're trying to defend against a really strong adversary. This guy can watch every link everywhere on the internet, and he owns many of the nodes in the system that we're trying to build. So we assume that he joined the system in some way. We're not real-time. You can't web surf over this thing. This is just for mail. We're not packet-based. We don't take your DNS queries and tunnel them also. We're not steganographic. You know that Alice is talking. We're just trying to stop you from knowing who Alice is talking to. Okay, so the first idea. You've got a direct forwarder. Basically, you've got a node, and Alice sends mail to the node, and Bob receives mail. And Alice says, please send this to Bob. And the node strips off Alice's header, and Bob gets it, and Bob doesn't know where it came from. On the other hand, if I'm watching Alice, then I can know, because I just read what comes out of her, I know what the message is. So we've got to fix that a bit. We encrypt it. So now Alice is sending the encryption of M to Bob, to 1, and 1 decrypts it with its key and sends it on to Bob. On the other hand, 1 still knows that Alice sent the message, so we want to fix that one. Multiple hops. You've got quite a few nodes here. Basically, Alice chooses a path through the mixed net, or the network in general, and she picks maybe nodes 1, 2, and 3. So she takes her message, she encrypts it with 3's public key, and then she says, this goes to Bob. And then she encrypts that with 2's public key and says, this goes to 3. And then encrypts that with 1's public key and says, this goes to 2. And then she hands it to 1, and 1 strips off the first layer, sends it to 2, strips off the layer, sends it on, and eventually it gets to Bob. And no single person knows that Alice just sent the mail to Bob. We assume that not everybody colludes. As long as one of the nodes here is honest, then we're probably doing okay. But how does Alice know what nodes to pick? How does she know what she can choose from? So you've got a concept of a statistics server. Basically, it's a website or something that you go to, and you say, well, what are the nodes in the Mixmaster system? What are the nodes in the Remailer system that I can use? And additionally, you can have reliability, reputation information, which ones are up, how often they're up, how likely they are to actually pass your message on when you go. So you want to have several statistics servers, not just one, because otherwise the adversary can go there and either knock it down or change what it says or something like that. And additionally, they can actually test things themselves. When one goes to the statistics server or directory server and says, hi, this is my key, these are my capabilities, this is how long I'm up, and then the directory server actually tries testing it and it doesn't transmit a message, then maybe it won't list it on the directory. Okay, so I talked a little bit about forward. Let's talk about replies. Now Bob wants to get a reply back to Alice, and Bob doesn't know where Alice lives. So in the simple case, about 10 years ago, there was a site called anon.pennet.fi. It was basically a single forwarder, and it knew people's email addresses because Alice went and said, I live at alice@alice.com, and here is my pseudonym, anon4192 or whatever, at anon.pennet.fi. And then Bob would go and say, please send this mail to anon4192. I don't know who that is, but it'll get there. And it did. On the other hand, observers of the system can still say, well, Bob sent it and Alice got it. It's obviously, this is where Alice lives. Also, one knows where Alice lives. Now, this is a problem for this particular site because the Scientology people came there and said, well, where does Alice live? And after a brief fight, they learned where Alice lived, so he took down the site. Okay, so reply blocks. Rather than just having the single node like that, instead you use the same concept that I just talked about forward, but in reverse. So Alice picks the path and then encrypts with 3, with 2, with 1, and then hands it to Bob and says, here's my reply block. Please send it to node 1. Node 1 will know what to do with it. And Bob doesn't really know where Alice lives, but he's got a reply block, and he hands it to 1 along with the message. And 1 pulls off one layer of the reply block and encrypts the message by a layer, and it works its way down the path until it gets to Alice, where Alice does decryptions for each of the keys that she set up, and then she can read the message. So, let's see. So it's hard for B to actually get Alice's reply block, because how would Alice get there? So Alice actually goes to a NIM server and says, so here is my reply block. If people want to talk to me, my name is alice@nim.alias.net. They can send mail there, and here's my reply block. If they send mail there, attach it to this reply block and forward it on to node number one. And so that's great. I mean, the name server knows A's reply block, but doesn't know where Alice lives. And we can chain both of these. So we have Bob sending anonymously to the NIM server, sending anonymously to Alice. So in this case, the NIM server doesn't know where Bob came from, because he just uses the chained forward approach. And then he uses the reply block, which uses the chained forward approach to get to Alice. So if you stop here, you get a type of remailer called Type 1, or cypherpunk remailers, that are from the early 90s. It's a pretty good system. I mean, you can do it as long as the adversary isn't very strong. There are a couple of problems with that, though. First one is, if you've just got one message, encryption doesn't matter so much. If I've got a node, and a message comes in, and I can't read it, and a message comes out, and I can't read it, I'm pretty sure it was the same message. So you can correlate that way. That's the basics of traffic analysis here. So what we do to block that is we have a batching system. This is where the high latency comes in. You have a bunch of messages that come in, and you wait to transmit any of them until you've got enough. And at that point, you decrypt all of them, you reorder them, and you send them out again. So an adversary looking in this case sees four messages coming in, and a while later, four messages coming out. And because of the encryption, a message going in looks completely different from a message going out. So he can't figure out which of those four corresponds to the other four. On the other hand, different sized messages can still be distinguished. If you've got four messages coming in and one of them's really big, and you've got four messages coming out and one of them's really big, then it's still obvious to figure out what's going on. So this is something that Mixmaster did that was really slick. So you've got your message. Basically, it's a set of headers at the top and then a payload down at the bottom, and it's nested encrypted. So you look at it when you get it, and you pull off the layer, and you look at the header on the front, and that says where it should go next and things like that. In this case, the way cypherpunks works is you decrypt it, you pull off the first header, and now you've got a smaller message. And then you keep sending it. And as it goes through the mixed network, it gets smaller and smaller. So people can learn pretty much how big your payload was. They can learn where in the path it is, maybe, if they have an idea of how big your payload was. So what you do is, once you've pulled off the header, you put some random junk at the bottom. That's easy. But what they've done is they rig it so you put deterministic random junk at the bottom. And that means that when you're trying to hash the message or something to make sure that it's valid, you can take into account what the junk that you add to the bottom will be, and the hash will still work. Okay, so that's all fine and good, but replay attacks. A message looks completely different when it goes into the mix as when it comes out because of the decryption, but if you take the same message and you send it in again, then it looks exactly the same when it comes out. So I can look at a message that Alice sends to Bob, and I can replay it again, and it'll go exactly the same place, and it'll look exactly the same. That's really bad news. Okay, so replay cache. Basically what you do is when a message comes in, you hash it so you can recognize if you've seen it before. If you've seen it before, then you drop it. You do not transmit it on. You do not put it in the batch. That way, when people attempt a replay, then they can't learn the same correlation as last time. If it's already in the cache, drop it. If it isn't in the cache, add it to the cache and then send it on. So that's all fine and good. But now you have to remember every message that has ever gone through your system. Expiration dates. Basically, you pick randomly some time frame between 3 days ago and 3 days from now, and you attach that as the expiration date. And if you get a message that's within the valid time, then you do the replay cache thing. You hash it, you put it in the replay cache, you check. And if it's too old, if it's more than 7 days old, then you drop it because you know that it's too late. You don't want to deal with a message like that. So that's not bad. I hear Windows. So, okay, we've got a flooding attack. That's the next thing to deal with once you've dealt with replays and expiration dates. Basically, I don't know how well you can see the picture, but we've got Alice sending a message through one to Bob. And all those red things are owned by the bad guy. So you've got a batch. You've got four messages coming in, four messages coming out. You don't know which one was which. Except in this case, the bad guy sent three of them, and he knows where those three go. So you've got that message that he can look at, and now we've got a more complex traffic analysis attack. But it's the same idea. So you can do this sort of flooding thing in a variety of places. Okay, so to stop, or at least to help stop flooding, we've got a notion of pooling. Basically, you have a pool that you've got of messages coming in, and when a new message comes in, you add it to the pool. Periodically, you take some fraction of the messages from the pool, and you process them and send them on. I hear Windows again. Okay. So at this point, you've got a number of messages in the pool, and the adversary looking at the system can't just flood it and know exactly which message comes out. He has to flood it a whole lot and wait till it flushes once, and then flood it again and wait till it flushes. And after a while, he'll have most of the messages in the pool. And at that point, he can do the same flooding attack as before. But it's harder to do, so it's a good start. Okay. So the trickle attack is the next issue. What if you're the only one who sends a message into the node in that time frame? We can go back to the batching issue. What if only one person sends a message? What is the mix supposed to do? Does he wait forever until three other people send a message? Maybe, if you want anonymity. But you're probably not going to have any users if that's how you do it. On the other hand, the pooling thing I just described is every time click, every 10 minutes or 15 minutes or something, you grab a fraction and you pull them out. So in this case, if I send a message in, very few other people send a message in, and then my message comes out, then it's pretty easy to correlate. And the adversary can actually force this by attacking the nodes that would otherwise be sending messages and stopping them for a while. So the broader problem is, what if I'm the only person who ever sends a message in a given time interval? I've got a global passive adversary watching the entire internet. Alice sends a message. A little while later, Bob gets a message. It's pretty clear that it was Alice sending it to Bob. If nobody's using the system, you don't get much anonymity. So there are a number of approaches to that. The one that Mixmaster uses is something called dummy messages. Basically, whenever you're online or nearby, Alice sends a dummy message several clicks through. So in any given situation, there are a lot of people sending, and hopefully quite a few people receiving. It's not really clear how to do dummy messages in terms of sending them to convincing recipients, because basically to get good anonymity, Alice has to send every time click. Every Alice has to send every time click. Every Bob has to receive every time click. Otherwise, you can start guessing, well, Bob didn't get mail that time, and Alice sent it, so Alice probably isn't talking to Bob. So dummy messages are complex, and it's unclear if they actually help anything. But it's worth a try. I mean, maybe it'll help something. So if you stop here, you've got Mixmaster remailers, which are the current state of the art. They're deployed. There are about 40 servers out there. Len will be talking about them in a couple of hours, and you'll hear more there. But basically, they're pretty good systems. If you don't have the adversary that I started out with, who can watch everything and who owns a lot of the nodes, then you're doing pretty well against Mixmaster. Okay, so let's talk about a couple more attacks here. First of all, you've got your passive subpoena attack. I watch the link, I watch the message go by, I wait a while, I go talk to some lawyers, I go talk to the FBI, and then I show up to the node and I say, hey, I got a message here, decrypt it for me. Here's my legal statement saying you've got to. That's potentially a bad thing, because if you've got all the nodes in the same jurisdiction, then the FBI just goes from place to place and says, well, decrypt this for me. Okay, now I've got that. Decrypt this for me. And after a while, he gets to Bob, and he says, oh, well, this message that I recorded here goes to Bob. That's bad news. So there are a number of approaches. The simplest one for now is we add link encryption with ephemeral keys. We add link encryption, and the key on the link changes every message or every few minutes as frequently as you can manage it. So basically, if somebody is watching on the link, they don't know anything. It's a very similar concept to SSL, except you want to change your key much more frequently. Okay, so if I fix that, I still got the active subpoena attack. There's a node, and the message goes through, and the node looks at the message and says, aha, good thing I work for the FBI. I'm going to take this, and I'm going to go get some subpoenas, and I'm going to work through the rest of the chain. So that still works pretty well. And it's hard to fix it, because the node has to see the message in order to process it. And he has to be able to remember it, and it's the same message down the road, and it decrypts the same way. So if you do periodic key rotation, then he has to get his subpoenas quickly, and he has to follow the chain quickly. Otherwise, he'll get to a node and say, I've got a piece of paper here that says you got to decrypt it. And the node will say, I'm sorry, I trashed that key last week. I can't do anything for you. On the other hand, in order to actually have working directory servers, you need to be able to put the actual key that you're going to use into the directory server, and you need clients to be able to get it in a reasonably good fashion. So we can't really rotate keys more often than once a month or maybe once a week or something like that. So this is still an issue. If the FBI catches on, or whatever the adversary may be, if they catch on and they say, well, let's do a bunch of subpoenas really quickly, then they might be able to succeed at that. Okay, now we get to the fun parts. Imagine you've got a directory server, and people go there and they say, I'm a new node, here's my key, here are my remailer statistics, my capabilities, I'm really good at being up during these times, whatever it says. And you put it on the directory server, and a client goes and gets it, and then uses it right after. If I'm watching that new node, most of the clients didn't go to the directory server. Most of the clients don't know about that new node. So we can pretty quickly partition the set of people who might have used it down to the people who just talked to the directory server. And remember, since I'm watching the entire internet, I know who just talked to the directory server. So that's one issue. We can distinguish clients that use a static node list, like most of the Mixmaster ones now, from ones that have built-in update mechanisms. More broadly, clients have to use the same algorithm, the same mechanism for updating. You've got to act like every other client, because if you didn't go to the directory server at a specific time and somebody else did, then you're going to be acting with different information than they have. And we have to take that into account and hopefully deal with it. So the argument there is directory servers have to be part of the spec. Mixmaster just said, well, you've got your node, and the node acts, and that's that. And then some people said, well, how do I find the nodes? And they put up websites saying what the nodes are. But we've got to actually specify how they work and specify how the client should get it. Otherwise, we're not going to get much anonymity. Okay, so if directory servers are out of sync, so you can't just have one directory server. Otherwise, somebody will go and knock it down or break in and change what the directory is or something. So you have to have quite a few. And if they're different, then you can look at a client who went to directory server D1 and he got this, and D2 said this, and this guy picked that path, so he was probably the one who went to D1 because they have different nodes listed or something like that. So we've got to keep them very tightly in sync, otherwise bad things start to happen. If you're an evil directory server, you can give out a rigged subset. You can say, oh yeah, here's the list of nodes you should use. You should use this one in Maryland, and this one in Maryland, and this one in Maryland, and it'll be great. You'll get wonderful anonymity. Go ahead. So we need to have actually some sort of infrastructure for the directory servers to say, I know about all these directory servers, and I took this directory, I took this list of nodes and their capabilities and keys, and I passed it around to a lot of directory servers, and they all signed it. And here, it's been signed by a threshold of directory servers. It's convincing. We need some sort of algorithm like that. We're still working in that direction, but it's clear that we need to do something about that. So note that I just assumed that a threshold of directory servers is good. I can specify what the threshold is, but that may be a limitation. We'll see. Okay, so remember I talked a little while ago about the expiration date thing. You pick an expiration date randomly between 3 days in the past and 3 days in the future, and that way nobody can tell anything about what's going on. That's not quite true. If I'm a bad node and I get a message, I can sit on it for 2 or 3 days, and now, rather than being evenly distributed from -3 to +3, it's going to all be around this corner. Maybe it'll expire, maybe I'll fail at my attack, but maybe it won't expire. And it'll be more likely that it'll be around the 2 or 3 days in the future expiration time than evenly distributed. So it's a statistical attack, and you've got to be kind of smart to do it, and you've got to be watching a lot of things to do it. But I imagine it would work pretty well if you try. So there's no really good fix here. Basically, anytime there's an expiration date, it has to be either about to expire, in which case they're all about to expire, and if you delay something, then you don't get your message through and people get unhappy. Or it has to have some buffer time, during which most people will send it at the beginning and very few people will send it at the end. So I can hold the message until it is later on in the expiration time, and now it will be an unusual message. It'll be rare to see one of those, and maybe I can detect that down the road. Okay, so the simple fix for now is throw away the expiration date concept. You got to keep the hashes until you rotate your key. If you don't like keeping a lot of hashes, rotate your key more often. Okay, so now we get the another interesting attack. So I talked about headers before. Mixmaster, the message itself has a header to node 1, a header to node 2, header to node 3, dot, 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 payload. Inside each hop header, it's got a hash. So you can make sure that that particular header wasn't messed with, so that all the elements in there are what the guy intended to send. On the other hand, the hash does not cover the rest of the message. It does not cover the other headers. So if I'm sitting early in the path, and I figure some guy is going to go through at least 4 or 5 nodes, so I look at the header that is going to be in say, 3 nodes down the path. I don't know where that guy will be, but I know the offset, so I can go there. I trash that header. No hash will tell me that that header is trashed until it gets to that guy 3 hops down the path. At that point, if I own that guy, I can say, well, gosh, I just got a message that got tagged. And I tagged a message a little ways back. And if I can assume that not too many people are tagging messages, I just got rid of those 3 nodes in the middle. I don't know where they were. I don't care where they were. I know that this message and this message are the same. So this is a pretty nasty concept. It comes up in low latency things like onion routing, but I don't want to mention those here. So basically, it also depends on the crypto system. It's not just I trash this header and it looks like a trashed header. If it's a stream cipher or a block cipher or something like that, and I can actually hit one specific byte, I hit byte number 31, and then when it goes down the path and I own that thing, I say, well, gosh, this header looks wrong, but if I fix byte 31, then the hash works out. So now I'm very sure that that's the message that I tagged before. So the first fix is we've got to make the hash cover the entire header. That's pretty straightforward. So there's another similar thing here, tagging attack on the payload. Mixmaster doesn't do any hashes of the payload at all. So somewhere in there, I trash the payload, and then I look as messages come out of the network. And I look at all the messages that go to Bob 1 and Bob 2 and Bob 3, and if I can do a specific byte tagging attack, like tagging byte 31 in the header before, then I can maybe trash a particular byte in the message going to Bob. And if most of them are plain text, then I look at the messages going to Bob and I say, well, that one looks like a fine letter. Meet me at so-and-so's corner. We'll exchange the goods. And one letter is wrong. And it's the letter that I tagged in the payload that I saw before. Now I have confirmed that the one I had here is the same one that was just delivered to Bob. Okay, so we make the hash cover the payload too. We're all set. Another issue, we're still using Cypherpunk replies. Mixmaster has no support for replies at all. It basically says, go ahead and use that earlier stuff, the stuff that doesn't have any replay detection, that doesn't have any repadding so messages are the same length, that doesn't... It's bad news. That's one of the major problems with Mixmaster at this point. It doesn't have any support for replies. Okay, so to fix this, we do all the stuff I just said for replies also. We're all set so far. A small note, we've got to use a crypto system where decrypt is as strong as encrypt, because when you're doing a forward, then you decrypt the message at each hop. And when you're doing a reply, then you encrypt the message at each hop, because the person receiving the reply knows all the keys and will strip all of them off at the end. But as long as encrypt and decrypt are both pretty strong, then we're fine, and the nodes don't actually have to care which one they're doing. You can set it so that they're actually equal. Encrypt is decrypt. Maybe it's a stream cipher where you XOR the stream cipher with the data or something. So far, so good. But you can't write a reply block now without knowing the payload, because you've got to put a hash of the reply, you've got to put a hash of the payload in the headers so that the tagging attack doesn't work. The guy who writes the payload is not the guy who writes the reply block. Bad news. On the other hand, the tagging attack doesn't actually work on a reply block, on a reply message, because it requires the adversary to actually see the message in plain text going to Bob. And in this case, since it's a reply, you encrypt it at each layer, and this big pile of encrypted garbage goes to the person, and they know to strip off everything. But only the person receiving the reply can check if it was tagged. And the adversary obviously isn't trying to find himself, so it'll work out. That's all fine and good so far. On the other hand, forward messages and replies must now be distinguishable. You've got to set it up. If you take out the hash for replies, so you say, okay, forward messages have the tagging attack problem, So we've got to put in a hash of the headers, and we've got to put in a hash of the payload. But replies don't have the tagging attack problem, so we don't need a hash of the payload. Now the nodes themselves can say, well, this one's a forward message, and this one's a reply message. If most people using the system are sending forward messages, then we've got the same flooding attack I described before, where all the red arrows are forward messages, and that one guy coming out is the reply message, and you just look and you know which one it is. Okay, so it may be that we don't want to fix this. And maybe we want to stop here and we want to say, this is quite a bit better than Mixmaster. Yeah, you can tell the difference between forward and replies, but on the other hand, I mean, Mixmaster didn't even have replies, so maybe we've improved it a little bit. Okay, I'm going to switch from problem fix, problem fix, problem fix to actually describe this design, because I don't have the time to go through the intuition of each part. So I'm going to tell you how it works, and then I'm going to argue that it works, and then I'm going to cover a last couple of things. So basically, Mixminion supports three types. You've got forward messages, where Alice sends to Bob, and Bob doesn't know who Alice is. You've got replies, where we send to Bob, and nobody knows who Bob is. And we've got anonymized replies, where Alice and Bob stay anonymous from each other and from observers and so on. So note that people who get anonymity out of the system, I require them to run our software. If you are receiving a message where the other guy wants to stay anonymous, then you just get it. You don't need any weird software. If you're sending a message in reply where the guy that you're sending to remains anonymous, then you don't need any software either. That's critical, because otherwise we're never going to have any users. And if both people are anonymous, then they both have to have software. Okay, so messages have two headers and a payload. Basically, you've got a first header, a second header, and the message itself. And in each header are a bunch of hop headers. So basically, you've got two where we previously had one. And the idea is we divide the path that, say, Alice is sending to Bob. We divide the path that Alice chooses into two legs. We've got the first leg and the second leg. And each of those corresponds with the header that we've got. So for forward messages, Alice chooses both legs. She says, I'm going to go this path to the middle and then this path to Bob. For reply messages, she's got Bob's reply block. So she says, okay, I'm going to just plunk in the reply block and it'll know where to go. For anonymized replies, she plunks in the reply block for the second leg and she makes her own first leg. So a single leg has to be enough to provide anonymity. In our current implementation, there are 16 hops to a leg, so that's probably plenty. When you get to the point of sending through 16 different places in the remailer network, you probably aren't going to get your message out the other end anyway. Okay, so was that a question? Or?
Well, it's a comment. I think about freeing, you don't get it out the other end.
You think about what?
Three.
Oh, okay. So his argument is, well, yeah, actually it's not 16. It's only a few, and then your message doesn't get out anyway. I'll get to that in a bit. Okay, so I've talked about two legs. There's a place in the middle called the crossover point. Now, the key here is when the message goes through the first path, at some point it gets to a hop that's labeled, I'm the crossover point. What happens now is you swap the two headers, so now you use the second one, so you're talking on the second leg, and you also decrypt the second header with the hash of the payload. So we'll talk a little bit in the future about why that is necessary. But the basic idea is if the payload has been tagged or the second header has been tagged, then the second header will be completely unreadable when you start using it at the beginning of the second leg. So we'll argue that is useful right now. Forward messages are anonymous. So the second header... If you tag the second header, then you'll never see what it is. You'll never see where the message was supposed to go. So maybe you can figure out that it was Alice sending, but we already assume you knew it was Alice sending. You're just trying to find out which Bob she's sending to. And you can't figure that out because you trashed the second header. Similarly, if you tag the payload, then we take the hash of the payload and decrypt the second header with that hash. And if the payload's wrong, then the decryption will be wrong, and it'll also be trashed, and you won't be able to figure it out. Okay, if we're tagged on the second leg, going to Bob, and we're not tagged on the first leg, then that first leg provided all the anonymity we need. So you can tag it and you can say, oh, it seems that a message went from here to Bob. But we don't know how it got to here. We don't know which Alice sent it. So that's what we want. Replies are anonymous because the adversary can never recognize his tag. If he tags it anywhere in that leg, then he'll never know that it worked. There's still a couple of issues here. For instance, I haven't yet said that we need to put a hash of the header, the entire header, in each hop. So you cannot tag hops within the header that you're working in right now. Otherwise, you could still do that same problem before where you recognize the message three or four hops down the path. Okay, so that's all fine and good. We're all set. I just convinced you that we get anonymity out of that. But the problem is, let's say Alice is sending a large message. And she breaks it up into a bunch of little messages, and they go through the Mixminion network. So maybe she sends 25 messages, each with a payload of 28K or something. Now, the adversary looks at that and says, wow, 25 messages. I wonder if I can do something with that. So he tags six of them. And they work their way along the same path to the crossover point. He happens to own the crossover point. Now he sees 25 messages arrive, six of which are trash. He doesn't know where those six go, but he knows where the other 19 go because they aren't tagged. So now he can recognize the tagging signature that he just made on Alice's messages as they exit Alice at the crossover point. So he has just broken the anonymity that we thought we got from the first leg, and now he can maybe do tagging on the second leg or who knows, because he can link Alice to the crossover point to Bob. So that's bad news. On the other hand, notice that it only works if the bad guy owns the crossover point. So we made the assumption before, he owns half the nodes, give or take. He doesn't own all of them, otherwise we know we lose. So if he owns the crossover point, he's got a good chance of owning the crossover point, one and two, something like that. Then we lose. So if Alice takes her 25 messages and she breaks them up so that they go to K different crossover points, then the adversary can start inducing timing signatures and tagging signatures on that. But if everybody always sends four messages to a given crossover point, then a given crossover point will get some messages, and maybe some of them are tagged, but it's really unclear if four messages arrive who sent the four. This, of course, assumes that we're going to have quite a few people sending more than one message. That's another issue of all clients have to behave exactly the same, otherwise we get less anonymity. But I'm not going to cover that much here. So the idea is Alice picks K crossover points, and as long as the adversary doesn't own most of them, then he cannot recognize his tagging signatures. Sort of a sketchy argument. I think I buy it. I really need to look at it some more first, though, before I actually trust this thing. Okay, so we've got NIM servers, and we've got single-use reply blocks. So the current NIM servers, you hand your reply block to it. You hand your reply block to nim.alias.net, and you say, this is Roger's reply block. Use it for every message you get. And the NIM server says, okay. And now messages come in. It attaches the message to the reply block and sends it on. And it works great, except the adversary can send 10,000 messages, and it will attach all 10,000 to the reply blocks, and you'll have a flood of 10,000 messages working its way through the mixed network. And you can pretty easily follow that, not to mention the fact that you've got your replay attacks and so on. So here we've got single-use reply blocks. We've got a replay cache detecting replayed reply block messages. So in this case, we really need to figure out how to make a NIM server again, otherwise nobody's going to want to use the system. So basically, it works like an IMAP server. You've got a NIM server, and you've got an address, maybe alice@nim.alias.net or whatever, and mail comes in, and it goes to the NIM server, and the NIM server keeps it. Optionally, the NIM server might encrypt it with the recipient's public key, so only that recipient can read it at that point. Maybe the NIM server is less liable, I don't know. But the idea is the guy who wants to get the mail sends a forward message in Mixminion to the NIM server saying, hi, this is me, I signed the message, I want my mail now, can you use these six reply blocks to send it to me? And the NIM server takes the messages that are waiting, attaches them to the reply blocks that we just gave it, sends it off into the network. So it's very much like IMAP. I mean, you just treat it like an IMAP server. You probably want to send more messages later on saying, okay, I got these three, you can delete those, can you send some more? So I think that should be pretty straightforward. We really need to work out a couple more details on that design, but it's a good start. Okay, so if you stop here, you get the current Mixminion remailer design. We fixed a lot of problems with Mixmaster. There are still a few more that I'm going to tell you about, but it's not bad. We've got code mostly written. We hope to have it done in a week or two. You can go poke at it right now to see that we actually do have code mostly written. I'll tell you the URL later on. Okay, some open problems. Reputation on the directory servers. If you're a directory server and you're trying to figure out which nodes are good so you can tell the clients, use these guys, they're generally up. This addresses your issue from before. Then you really want to start doing some pretty serious testing. You want to send some test messages and see if they work. But if you only send test messages from you, then the guy can say, well, that's a test message. Of course I'm going to answer that one. And then to the directory server, you look really good. And to everybody else, he just drops their message on the floor. So you've got to have a bit of a more complex reputation system. I designed a couple in the past, one for free routes, one for cascades. They all have their problems, but they're pretty good. The two main problems that we've got with that are you're letting the adversary partition the set of users. You've got to have the clients act exactly the same. And even then, if the adversary wants more traffic, if he's trying to do traffic analysis and he's got a lot of money and his goal is to read messages, he should set up a bunch of remailers that are really, really reliable. And people will gravitate towards those remailers, and suddenly he'll be reading all the traffic. And maybe he'll set one up in Maryland and one in Australia and one in Greenland and who knows where, because we assume that this guy's pretty strong and pretty powerful and has money and connections wherever. So one of the critical pieces here is you cannot tell based on performance whether somebody's a bad guy. And this is a really unfortunate concept, because it'd be really great if I could say, well, okay, so that guy's doing badly, don't use him. That guy's doing well, use him. You're fine. But if your adversary is strong and is watching the entire network and is trying to read your traffic, then you really don't want to let him do that. You don't want to let him have control over what path you choose. Because the whole point in this system is for you to hide the path that you're using. So that's an open problem. It's not that bad of a problem, because we've got some ideas of how to solve it, and we've got a pretty good idea of what the problems are, so it's a good start. Trickle attack on directory servers. This is a similar issue to what I talked about before. So I've got a couple of nodes that I own, and I can watch the directory servers. A message comes in, and I think, I wonder if this goes to that really reliable remailer that everybody's sending mail to. It probably does. I'm going to hold it. I'm just going to sit on it for a couple of days, because remember that our expiration times are no longer in the message. A message only works for 30 days or so, because you rotate your key at some point, but it'll work any time in those 30 days. So I'm a bad node. I sit on the message. Then I knock down the node that I think it's going to go to later, the one that's really popular. That one goes down in the directory servers. People stop using it. Nobody's using it at this point. It's a week and a half later. Everybody thinks that schmuck, he knocked down his remailer, he's no good. Now I release the message. Wanders through the network. I'm watching the node that I just knocked down. The message arrives. Now, either somebody was really unlucky and he picked one that was down, with low probability, because maybe he weights all the remailers by reputation. Or maybe it's the message that I was sitting on. It's probably a good bet it was the message I was sitting on, especially if I held it for 2.5 weeks or 3.5 weeks or enough to convince me that nobody on earth would be sending messages to that remailer. So that's bad news. There is an approach to a fix. The idea is a synchronous network. Basically, every message has a time by which it must be transmitted to the next one in the remailer. And that time is maybe 10 or 15 minutes or an hour or whatever it is. So messages synchronously go through in batches, and they all have to go. You cannot delay one, or the next guy will never accept it. On the other hand, this has problems, because if you do delay the messages, then all the messages drop and nobody gets their mail. And you can pretty easily delay messages on the internet if you're the type of adversary I described. So it's harder to make a system that people will want to use if it's synchronous. But it seems more anonymous. We need to look at that some more also. So, yeah, we're still in an arms race against the flooding and trickle attacks. We can improve the pooling and batching approaches, so maybe it'll be harder to flood. But it's still a nasty problem. Okay, so the worst issue here, long-term intersection attacks. On Monday, Alice sends mail. Bob gets mail. On Friday, Alice sends mail. Bob gets mail. Next Thursday, Alice sends mail. Bob gets mail. The week after that, Alice goes on vacation. Bob doesn't get mail. We're starting to notice a trend here. And all you have to do to be that is to be a global passive adversary. Maybe you own Carnivore, maybe you're Sprint, who knows. You're watching the internet, and you're watching long-term patterns of the users. So it doesn't matter that you can do traffic analysis inside the cloud. Treat the entire MixNet as a cloud you can't see in, and just look at messages coming in and messages coming out. And over time, you're going to notice people's patterns and behavior, and you're going to get a pretty good idea. Alice generally sends mail when this Bob receives mail. So I'm pretty sure those are the guys that are talking together. This sort of thing is a real problem in low latency systems like Freedom and Onion Routing, where you're doing a web request over this network and a request comes in and you really can't batch for 10 minutes, so you've got enough convincing cover traffic. You have to actually send the message all the way through. So Alice starts a web request. The web server gets a web request. It answers. Alice gets an answer. All this happens in under a second. You can't have enough cover traffic to block that sort of thing. So that it's a real problem in low latency, but it's also a real problem in high latency networks because it's exactly the same problem. You can batch, so it's less clear the actual timing correlation, but over time it's going to be exactly the same thing. This is a major unsolved problem in anonymity systems. There are a couple ideas on how to approach solving it, but none of them will work. We really need to figure out something better. Okay. So if this stuff is cool, come to a workshop about it. We're running another workshop on privacy-enhancing technologies. This one is in Dresden at the end of March in 2003. Ask me questions about it later or send me mail. The URL is petworkshop.org. And go to mixminion.net and play with our code. Grab it, look at it, see what you like, see what you don't like. Send us mail, try it. At some point soon, we're going to be trying to look at having some people actually run nodes and see how that works. We're working with the Mixmaster people to migrate all of the Mixmaster nodes over to Mixmanion. So hopefully this will work out as a smooth replacement and everybody will be able to get stronger anonymity. Ask me a bunch of questions. Yes? So the question is, you're talking about 25 messages going to the crossover point. Is that 25 messages, is that different crossover points per message or for a group of messages? So you've got, let's say you've got a one meg file. You break it up into a bunch of files. You have a bunch of little shares, and you want to send those to different crossover points. Does that answer the question? Dummy messages don't work. Dummy messages, it's a, what? Dummy messages, it's hard to argue either way. It's clear that you confuse people better. I agree with you on that. But if you're looking at the overall system and you see a message go a little ways and then stop, that was a dummy message. If it goes to Bob, it wasn't a dummy message. Alice is not online all the time. The question was, why not send dummy messages from Alice to Bob all the time? Alice is gone sometimes. Bob won't get the messages then. Yes? So you're asking, what happens if Alice sends message and Bob is not there to get it? Okay, well then, Bob dies and the mail goes to the bitbucket. You cannot send back, yes, Bob got it, or no, Bob didn't get it. Alice never knows if Bob gets her message. That's correct. Now, there could be an out-of-band thing where Bob has a receipt that he sends back, and maybe the receipt is attached to a reply block, so he doesn't even know where Alice lives. He could intentionally drop that into the mailbox, and it'll go there, if he chooses. Yes? I'm not sure I understand the question. It sounds like a complicated answer, though, so ask me afterwards. Other questions? Okay, ask me now. What? So the question is, you've got these trickle attacks that look like bad things. Can we use these trickle attacks to our advantage and use the same concept to try to figure out if there are nodes that aren't sending messages at the right time or nodes that are in some other way misbehaving? My first answer is, not that I know how to do. The problem is that the adversary is only bad when he wants to be bad, and he's really good otherwise. So it's tricky to try to distinguish this guy is being bad now, this guy is being good now, he's being unreliable, he's being the adversary. It's really hard to tell who's where there. Question? So the question is, if Alice sends a message right before the keys are rotated, first of all, will Bob lose his message? Maybe. Probably. It could be that we remember the keys, we remember both keys for a little while. We've got a partitioning attack against that, though, because if you remember both keys, and one of them is the one you're supposed to use because you knew about it, and the other one is the one that you could use if you're old, if somebody sat on your message for a while or something, then you can figure out this message is probably one that was sent quite a while ago, and break the anonymity that way. So, yes, but it's complicated. Yes? Are there any plans to use DC nets or anything like that? The short answer is no. DC nets are basically an idea where you can broadcast anonymously to people. So the biggest problem with DC nets is that they're very brittle. If anybody refuses to participate, then you don't get your message through. They can jam it. They're also kind of complex to build and go with. They're a nice idea so you can reason about the concept of an anonymity set. They're not a good idea in practice yet. And the concept of an anonymity set, which is how many messages am I hiding in, is also a flawed concept at this point. Because the question isn't, how many messages am I hiding in? It's, how likely is it, given what you know about me and the other senders, that I was the one who sent it to Bob? Maybe I live with Bob and the other guys don't. Maybe there's some out-of-band information. So you really want to look at an information theoretic perspective of what's the probability, not how many messages there are. Yes? Okay, the question is, you're still storing a lot of hashes for a month. Are you crazy? And it isn't that bad. It depends how many messages you've got going through. But a couple of calculations we did. You've got maybe 10 or 20 megs of hashes over the month. That's not so bad. Have we considered using a Bloom filter instead? No, I haven't. But my guess is that a Bloom filter wouldn't do what we want here. The basic idea of a Bloom filter is you've got this little blob, and you keep adding little things to it, and it changes so that you can recognize most of the things that you've added to it. I think that I could still do a replay against that, such that I can't tell from the Bloom filter if it was in there or not. Let's chat about that afterwards. If you get false positives and you drop it, then that's... Okay, that's a possibility. The real question is, do you mind storing 20 megs of stuff? And I think most people will answer no, except for those crazy people trying to write remailers on floppies. So maybe that'll be good for them. Other questions? Pardon me? So the question is, who's going to buy this? So there are two questions in that. One of them is, who's going to use it? It's going to be available free. It's going to be totally free, GPL or LGPL. I'm not sure we've decided which yet. And you really don't want to charge anything, because then you get into the mess of an anonymity company. And we know that those don't work so well these days. So the second question is, how do you fund the damn thing? How do you get people to volunteer to run nodes when they're going to have a lot of messages going through them, and they're going to have to provide bandwidth for that, and they're going to have to deal with law enforcement officers knocking on their door and messing with their family? Ask Len in a couple of hours. He's giving a talk on that. The very short answer is people do it. People volunteer for this stuff. There are going to be lots of volunteers. There are two critical problems with volunteering right now. One of them is it's really hard to set the thing up. And the other one is exit abuse. If you're an exit node, then people send abuse mail through you. They send death threats to the president or something awful like that. And then the Secret Service comes knocking, and pretty soon, unless you're in a really good jurisdiction, your remailer is going to go down because your administrator is going to take it down. So there are very few exit nodes at this point. And we're working on ways to make that a little bit nicer. The first answer is it's still pretty good to have lots of middleman remailers. Those are remailers where they don't actually allow exits to arbitrary people, maybe just to themselves or maybe to other remailers. Did that answer the question? Do you have any more parts to the question?
The exit business is the whole answer to the anonymity, and there's really not a lot of exit stuff out there, or they're very unreliable. You can go to five of the mixmasters, and the reliability is not there.
Okay, so the point is, the current Mixmaster infrastructure is not reliable enough to actually make this go. We're hoping to fix that with easier to run software, better anonymity, cleaner code, cleaner documentation, actually telling people how it works. You know, the whole free software, grab a bunch of volunteers, try and make it go. We'll see. Who wants to be the exit where actual messages can come out of? Well, Len does. MIT does.
MIT does not. I mean, you could try forwarding through theirs and it don't work no more. Go back 5 years, it used to work with cyberpunk.
Okay. That's because David Mazarias left. And he's now at NYU, and he's not running the MIT one. But anyway, there are plenty of exit servers, and hopefully there will be more than 40 or so in a while, and then we'll have cleaner code, and we'll go from there. Okay, I'm going to let the next person come up because she wants to set up. Thank you. Find me afterwards with questions.